Bob Surratt.
Working 5 to 9
on WGN.
Yeah. That's me.
You can do it.
6:40. Good morning. And let's say good morning to Dr. Kevin Most, the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Doc, are you enjoying the balmy weather? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about a little heat wave here?
Yeah, 40 tomorrow. So the good news is the positivity rate in Illinois, the lowest it's been in 7 months. The scary news is about all these coronavirus variants. I guess the one from the United Kingdom has been identified in Illinois, but not the South African. Is that right? And the South African is the one that's more troubling to you medical professionals?
Yeah, you know, it probably is the most troubling, just because when you look at what's happening in South Africa, one of the vaccines that we're hoping really is a savior is the AstraZeneca vaccine, and that's been proven in South Africa to not be as effective as they really wanted it to be. So certainly we know we're going to see variants, and we're going to continue to see variants. It's a matter of whether we can stay ahead of them with the vaccines or get enough people vaccinated so a variant doesn't really make a difference.
Let's talk about some questions that have come up regarding side effects. Do we know if the side effects are much different between the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines?
No, they're pretty comparable. And everyone has to really remember that the side effects are very short-lived. You know, you might have arm weakness, or excuse me, not arm weakness. You might have some arm pain. You might have some lethargy. You might have some fever. But really, it's going to be 24, 48 hours. And I can tell you that the optimism and the knowing that you're protected certainly will outweigh any of the side effects. But they're pretty comparable between the two vaccines.
There was a study recently about vitamin C. We've talked about this a lot. It's very important to keep your immune system running at full capacity. Vitamin C seems to help, or at least we were told. And now there's a study that finds vitamin C and zinc don't lessen the COVID-19 symptoms. What do we know about supplements at this point in regard to the virus?
Yep. So people have to understand, vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, we don't use those to treat an illness. That's what that study showed. That study showed that if we gave people high doses of vitamin C, high doses of vitamin D, gave them zinc supplements, it didn't change the symptoms, didn't change the duration of the illness. But we have to remember that those medications and those vitamins are used to boost the immune system, are made to keep your immune system in check and on top, not to treat an illness, but to hopefully prevent it or to make sure that your body can fight it off easier. So this wasn't surprising to too many people. It was like, hey, you know, Linus Pauling thought that, you know, vitamin C was a cure-all. Mm-hmm. It really isn't, but we know that giving it to people when they don't have enough of it in their diet will certainly increase their immune system to make sure that if they were to get ill, the illness would be less damaging. So, but it's not a treatment. We have to just understand that. It's not like, oh, an antibiotic. I got COVID. I'm going to take vitamin C. No, it was taking the vitamin C, vitamin D prior to that to help your immune system.
I was thinking about this over the weekend, getting gas and being careful with the pump and so forth. We have learned, though, that this virus is not that easily transferable from surfaces. Is that correct?
Yeah, Bob, remember when people were leaving their groceries in the garage for 2 days and wouldn't touch their mail for a week and didn't want to open anything from China? We really have found out that about 99%, if not higher, of the illness has been spread from person to person, not from object to person. We still want to make sure that we're, you know, keeping surfaces clean because the virus can still get on those surfaces. But certainly the transmission of disease from individual to individual is just that, not from a package, not from a surface, not from a gas pump, but really from an individual.
But we don't want to let up on washing our hands, do we?
No, we don't. You know, we certainly don't. You cough in your hand, and we say person to person. It could be something as simple as you coughing in your hand, you're shaking hands with somebody, they touch their face. That's a person to person, even though people might say, well, that's a surface. But really, it's the individual proximity that it's important. So absolutely, we should be washing our hands. And we've shown that by washing our hands and masking, look at the decrease in COVID cases, but also look at the non-existence of a flu season this year.
Yeah, that's been very good news. Are you double masking, Doc?
I'm double masking outside of the hospital. In the hospital, if I'm in a meeting or something, I'm still wearing the one simple mask. But when I'm outside, I certainly am double masking. And people might say, well, that doesn't make any sense. Well, here in the hospital, we make sure that we're always physical distance. We always make sure that we're, you know, washing hands and doing all the things proper. So I can control my environment here at work a lot better than I can control my environment outside. So the double mask outside, I'll travel this week, and I will certainly be double masked.
Do you think if you're traveling, if you're going through an airport, if you're on a plane, glasses, goggles, you recommend that?
You know, I don't. I think that if people are doing everything they're supposed to be doing, the chance of the virus getting into your eye is probably higher if you were to touch your face and touch your eye. One of the great things about goggles is not only does it protect you from an airborne propulsion of a virus into your eye, but also stops you from rubbing your eyes. In the acute care setting where we're dealing with people where the aerosol, the virus can be aerosolized and in the air, certainly all of our hospitalists, all our proceduralists are wearing, you know, goggles or a face shield. But out in the general public, I'm personally not doing it. But if people want to be cautious and feel better and decrease their anxiety, certainly go ahead and do it.
Yeah, as you say, the best part about having glasses on would be if you are going to rub your eye, it makes you stop and think for a second because you have to like get under your glasses or take your glasses off. Continuing with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. And we're hearing from listeners about this all the time. Let me read this to you, Dr. Most. I've run out of patience. I'm 63, haven't hugged my four grandchildren or my 89-year-old mother since March, and it seems my age group has fallen through the cracks. I can't find anywhere where I qualify for a vaccine. My heart is broken. How are we doing on vaccine supply, and does anybody have any idea when people younger than 65 are going to be eligible to get it?
Right. So vaccine supply, obviously, we have much more demand than we have supply, and that's going to be an issue probably for another couple of weeks. Everyone has to understand that when we started doing those outside of the healthcare, you know, those over the age of 65 nursing homes, we didn't see a huge increase in the supply. But we have to remember that a month later, not only are we giving those the second doses, but what about the first doses for next people? So when you only see an increase of about 15% in production, you know that you're not going to be able to keep up with the demand. So that is certainly going to frustrate everybody. The governor has opened it up in the state of Illinois as of next week, you know, for those individuals who are between 16 years old and 63 with comorbidities. I can tell you that there's not going to be a lot of places that are going to be able to do that because we haven't completed the 1B group yet, which is essential workers and those over the age of 65. So we're still working through that group right now. So I would say, I know a lot of people are frustrated, especially with the governor saying, hey, go ahead, you can get it, but you can't find it. It's a supply issue, plus we need to get these other individuals vaccinated first. But if Johnson & Johnson gets approved this Friday, like we all expect it to be, we should see some influx here of vaccine, and this other first group that we've just vaccinated will get their second dose, and now we'll be opening up more slots. So I think you're going to start to see more supply, and you're going to start to see more manufacturers that are going to be able to push through vaccine.
Let's hope. Nice message from Judy in Lindenhurst, who appreciates your good information and wants to know if there is still a link between type A blood types and increased likelihood of contracting COVID or getting a more serious case of the virus.
Yeah, so the blood type issue came up a long time ago when we showed that people with type O negative blood actually were somewhat protected. And then it said, wait a second, what about people with type A blood? Because they seem to have a harder time and they seem to do worse with it. And really now it's been looked at again, and it really looks like the only blood typing issue is that the type O will give you some protection. The type A, probably not. People don't have to worry about, oh, I have type A blood. I think the type A and type Bs are still going to get the virus. It's not going to be as protective. So you really want to make sure that you're you can't do anything about your blood type, right? We all have our blood types. So really do everything you possibly can to protect yourself. But I wouldn't get anxious about your blood type in the virus.
Patricia has a question about the side effects of the vaccine for patients with allergies. Should they take the vaccine when eligible?
Well, they should, unless their allergy is a severe allergy, an anaphylactic allergy. In other words, those who are so allergic to peanuts that when they are in the room, you know, they have breathing problems and issues there. So people with allergies, for the most part, can go ahead and get the vaccine. Those who have anaphylactic allergies are certainly ones that we're going to say, hey, why don't you wait? Or if you really, really, really have to get it, make sure you get it in a hospital setting where an emergency room is close by to treat that. That being said, those who are asthmatic allergies, so those are the individuals who are on asthma medications and use inhalers all the time, certainly speak to your doctor as to whether he wants you to get the vaccine now. But for the most part, we're going to vaccinate all those people with allergies unless it's a very severe allergy.
It must drive you crazy to see these polls and the number of people who still don't want to get the vaccine, or they're afraid of the vaccine. They don't understand the vaccine. I don't understand how anybody can think this way, but too many people are what they call vaccine alarmists. I mean, doesn't it drive you nuts, Doc?
Yeah, it does. You know, I think that the part that drives me nuts is when someone shows me a social media post from, you know, some random person that's just saying that the vaccine is not safe, you know, and it's like, you guys, let's go over the safety. You know, 75,000 people got this vaccine during the clinical trial, not even talking about the millions who have gotten it since. You know, and out of those 75, none of the patients who got the vaccine died from the vaccine. None of them were hospitalized. And we didn't see any deaths from those individuals who got the vaccine. So I just let science show you. If people say this was rushed, it wasn't rushed. It was that we had 200 different companies that were making this. So we had great opportunities to get it tested. And now look at Bob, you know, look at how many millions of people have been vaccinated now around the world. And you're not seeing any of these issues coming up. And you're seeing the rate of positivity dropping dramatically. So I think the combination of those and the people who are the alarmists or the anti-vaxxers, you know, unless we all get on board, we're all going to be wearing masks. We aren't going to be going to restaurants. We aren't going to baseball games. We need to control this virus and control the spread of it. And the only way we're going to do that is mass vaccination.
Yeah, nationwide, nearly half of Americans say they would refuse a shot if offered one. And as you point out, Dr. Most, we need to get to herd immunity, don't we?
We do. You know, in herd immunity, anywhere from 70 to 80%, well, if half the people are saying, I'm not going to get the vaccine, I would say to those who got the vaccine, know that you're protected from illness. And know that you are not going to be one of those individuals who's going to end up in the hospital and you know, with severe problems. So the individuals who say, I'm not going to get the vaccine, I say good luck to you, because you're going to end up getting the virus. And hopefully your immune system will fight it off and you won't end up in the hospital on a ventilator. But we have to understand that we have so many ways to get to immunity. One of them is with the help of a vaccine. The other is that you're going to get the virus, and you're going to have to see how your own immune system will do.
And I'd rather have a minor side effect than a ventilator attached to me.
Yes.
It's yep. Dr. Kevin Most. Thanks as always, Doc. You have a good week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
You got it, Bob. Take care.